This is exactly right.
On the 12th season of Tenfold More Wicked, we investigate a series of compelling mysteries from the city of Fall River, Massachusetts, where problems started generations before Lizzie Borden's murders made her a household name. Join me as we cover the misfortunes that have befallen this infamous town for more than 150 years, including the Great Fire of 1843. Season 12 premieres Monday, May 13th on Exactly Right. Follow Tenfold More Wicked on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to My Favorite Murder.
Oh.
For some reason, professional to me is like
a low voice.
Is ASMR videos?
Is ASMR videos.
Welcome to My Favorite Murder.
This Karen, that's Karen Kilgareth.
That's two different things.
I mean, really?
Guys.
Professionals.
This is the third time we've started tonight.
Yes.
Let's see if we can nail this.
It got real bad. We thought you guys missed a lot of up. Driving, you missed, I spoiled a movie. Go watch the movie Christine. It's on Netflix. And I won't, that's all I'm going to tell you.
That's all you're going to tell them. And don't look anything up about it. Just watch it. If you dare, just watch it cold and don't know what it's about.
It was everything that I wanted because it was took place in the 80s. It was all vintage clothing.
Rebecca Hall?
Rebecca Hall was incredible. Michael C. Hall has played such a douche. I love it.
All the Halls are in it?
All the Halls.
And it's about the invention of Hall's cough drops?
Yep. The Halls are the Halls of, what are they? What was their catchphrase?
Deck the Halls. Now this is just word association. Should we start again?
No, we're on a roll. Let us do it. We're leaving tomorrow for Denver.
Oh, yes.
That this will come out next week.
So, hey, Denver.
Hi. Guess
what? I can't believe how high you got, everybody.
Yeah. So, actually, we're leaving in 2 days for Australia.
Oh, shit.
Dude. Are you excited? I made us reservations at a restaurant already.
That's right.
Did I tell you that already?
Yeah, you did. I am excited. I have to say, I'm very angry at the ghost of my mother because as the...
Sounds healthy already.
The one thing she did harp on in her life was it was always a nursing related thing or a health related thing. Anytime I flew to New York or back east, she would say, get up and walk around. You don't want to die of a blood clot. She would say that to me before I got onto the plane.
Which is like, great.
Thanks.
Thank you.
For building that into my psyche
now,
that it'll never leave.
You are not supposed to cross your legs on takeoff and landing.
Really?
For that reason.
Is that true?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's fucking true, but that's my paranoia that I've read. Don't cross your legs.
That's so specific, though.
Because you're cutting off blood circulation.
Right, but why takeoff and landing?
Because of the pressure.
Okay.
You're asking already.
I'm sorry. Well, I mean, yeah, all of it is.
That makes sense-ish.
It's just a concern that I have.
Okay, so your mom told you that.
All my pants are too tight, and I'm scared I'm going to die of a blood clot.
Okay. Wait, oh, you mean in life?
Those are kind of two separate, and then at the same time, the same issue.
Well, here's good news.
Okay.
Since we're flying business class, there's a bar in business class. So you can walk over and meet me and Vince at the bar in business class getting absolutely shit hammered.
Wait, is this like international waters where I can drink on the plane to Australia because it doesn't count as being in America or my actual life?
Yes, and then you'll have a blood clot and a seizure on the plane.
It's for real. And I'll punch everybody. I will punch the pilot and be arrested.
Vince keeps making up scenarios like he likes to do. And then George is running around the business class in her G-string. I don't even wear G-string. Suddenly, oh, he goes, you're debuting your first G-string. Running around. Miss, we need you to...
Because you're going to be so drunk.
Because I'll be so drunk and so excited that we're in business class.
Very exciting.
So...
I like the idea that I can lay down. That really brings me a lot of relief. But it is scary to me. I don't know. There's something nerve-wracking about a plane flight that long.
Huh. Okay. Well, we'll hold your hand.
Okay.
We'll be in a pod.
That's right. We'll be in a pod. Steven, you'll be there.
Are you on the same flight as us?
No, I'm not on the same flight.
I was going to send you back drinks constantly.
No.
Yeah. Well, I'll send them anyways.
Then Steven's in his G-string.
Yeah.
Out of control.
Steven's in my G-string.
I'm ready. I got tearaway pants and everything.
Yes. Australia style.
I mean, I've done that flight before. I've done the flight to New Zealand. So that one's a little bit longer than Australia. But like, I feel like I just slept the whole time. I just was like, I can't handle this long of a flight where it's like we're landing like 2 days later.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But
it's going to be intense.
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
It's definitely going to be exciting. Oh, I'm going to get one of those Evian spray bottles and just spray water on my face the whole time.
Just, ma'am, can we, ma'am, everyone's complaining.
Ma'am, nobody wants you to do that anymore.
The person behind you is soaking wet because you keep doing it over your head.
Like, this is what rich people do.
Does that stuff do anything? All right.
Okay. Let's talk about podcasting.
Oh, I want to say for the live show, since we're on the subject, that I think that we haven't told people that. So we do like sometimes two or three shows in the same city. We do a different murder every night.
Oh, yes.
So I feel like some people are like, because we did that once. The first time we did two shows in one night.
I believe it was Seattle, right?
Yeah. And like you could hear the people in the second show who had been at the first one like audibly groan.
Yeah.
And then we were both like, oh.
It felt bad.
Yeah, the air went out of the room.
We were just staring at each other like, why are we doing this?
What is wrong with us? Like I saw, and I could see in the front row like the same two faces I had seen in the show before.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to apologize. So
I think we did apologize to a lot of people. You know what we did? We stopped doing it. Therefore, that is the living apology that we did.
So we don't do the same murder.
Ever.
Ever. And
it's a lot of work. I'm really mad about it.
Like you said, you feel like you have 15 book reports.
Yes.
It's true. And we have all new really cool merch that you can't get online for sale at the shows. And
live show.
Like, we actually put a lot of work into it. And it's, like, fucking cool shit.
Georgia, if you were single and you had a Bumble profile, I think that merch would be one of the things you would list under your interests.
I'm really into it.
You're fucking about merch and have been since day one.
It's just so fun. There's so much cool shit. We have a shirt now and it says I'm A, and then there's one that says Karen, one that says Georgia, but it's in our signatures.
Yes.
Which was Vince's idea. And it's so fucking cool. Shit, it was Karen's idea. You just mouthed it at me. God damn it, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
You just gave me so much credit for like doing merch, and then I was like, you don't do anything.
I do sometimes from the privacy of my home.
Well, then I don't think it's that great of an idea anymore.
What happened? You loved it when Vince did it.
Vince asked me to say that.
I would like to say, props to Vince. There are lots of people who contacted us from Los Angeles or grew up here or whatever, that needed to say there is a Carvel ice cream shop in Los Angeles out on the west side.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't know that. I've never heard of it at all in California at all.
Me neither. Fudgy the Whale, I've been hearing about forever. Who else contacted us to let us know about Carvel? Carvel
themselves.
Yeah.
What did they say?
Did you see the tweet? What did it say, Steven? Oh, because we were talking about getting a Carvel Fudgy the Whale for 100th show.
Yes.
And
yeah,
they said
like, the countdown's on, party time.
It's on us or something.
Yeah. Oh, really?
We're fucking famous now. To that and me, I was like, that's it. Why is a cake, an ice cream cake or whatever, that we can afford ourselves, send Steven to get?
Yeah.
To me, I'm tweeting at us. I lost my mind.
You've changed.
No, I haven't.
Send Steven to get.
That's the part I changed. I'm excited about a cake, which is nothing new. But sending to Steven.
It's a real celebration. Yeah. Well, what's funny to me is people talked about it and they were like, I grew up eating it and da da da. Well, I looked it up, and as far as I could tell, that shop opened in 2008.
No.
That's what it said on the website.
Santa Monica?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And it's the only one in LA.
I think there's one outside of LA, too. I think there was one in, like, Monrovia.
Oh, is that a place? Over in Monrovia?
Over in Monrovia. Like, it's one of those places where I'm from Southern California, and I don't know where that, like, there are these cities that you're like, why would I know where Pacoima is?
It's like, there's a mystery spot that's kind of like along the...
It's called Inland Empire.
Yeah. The mountain range.
Vince was like, how do you not know where these places are?
Like Claremont?
Yeah.
What's happening over in Claremont?
I don't know. Nobody goes there unless...
I think they stay there. They're like, fuck LA.
Yeah.
We stay here.
Which is fair. It's like, I've been to a couple of the places. I'm like, oh, it's fucking adorable.
Well, Claremont's fancy, too.
Is it?
It has like that college. They have colleges over there.
Oh, you mean Harvard?
That's That's where Harvard is.
What if they had Harvard too?
That's where.
Is there a Harvard too?
It's similar to Harvard. It's tons of ivy. It's just mostly it's a school to teach you how to grow ivy.
They just have a plant. They teach you how to grow ivy. Do you know that my mom is a horticulturist and I really want her.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
Janet's a horticulturist?
Yeah.
Is that true?
She's going to school for it. She's always been so fucking hardcore into plants.
Wow.
And then finally at 71, she's like, well, I'm going to go to school to be a horticulturist.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So she works at like a nursery and I'm dying for her to open her own her own plant shop, and I just only because I want her to call it Little Shop of Horticulture. Is that the best thing you've ever heard?
Yeah, it
no,
really is.
It's not.
No, that one I'm going to go with.
Okay.
That one I like.
That's good.
Yeah, right? It was good.
Thank you. That was a sidebar.
What if she did that and then she gets sued by the people?
By Rick Moranis?
by the evil dentist Steve Martin.
That was so pointless. Please go on.
Yeah, I mean, seriously. It's like we're trying to get people to not listen to this podcast. Here's this series I have to talk about because I'm so into it.
Okay.
The Sinner. Are you watching it with Jessica Biel?
Oh, I'm dying to.
Okay, you have to.
I'm dying. I didn't know it was on yet.
Jessica Biel. Bill Pullman plays the cop.
Oh.
I don't know. Some Jon Snow looking motherfucker plays her husband. I've never seen him before, unless it is Jon Snow and he's doing an American accent. I'm not sure what's happening.
I don't really know who that is.
He's beautiful. And it is a, like, she doesn't know. You have to see it.
I've seen the commercials and I've gotten like chills.
It's on demand. Anyway, if you like, I don't know, if you like a good series, which this is, and it is, it has the crime feel to it, but it also is like has a very well written and paced drama feel to it. Jessica Biel, who I've never known at, like I'm too old to be in that seventh mm-hmm. heaven generation.
Oh, me too.
She is so good.
I'm not. I just hated it.
It's, I mean, like it's a little. Hopefully. You're not that into Christianity. That's probably what it is.
Actually, did you know I am?
What?
Yeah.
You're a Jew for Jesus?
Jew for Jesus.
Yeah. So anyway, if you are looking for something new to watch, highly recommend The Sinner.
It's not, so I was worried it's going to be like corny. Like, you know, they keep trying to make these shows that are like True Detective and they're not. Like,
right.
I really didn't like The Ozarks. Did you watch that?
I didn't watch it because,
everyone loved it and I'm sorry to, I don't care, but it was, I hated it. And so I was like, oh, I hope this isn't another one of those.
Right now, Jason Bateman has a single tear rolling down his cheek.
And he's saying, okay. That's what he says in the beginning of every... Sorry, shit. I really want like a walk-on role in the new Arrested Development, so I shouldn't talk shit on
Jason. Is that really what you want?
No. Who gives a shit? No.
Are you vision boarding right now?
I'm just spitballing my vision board.
A walk-on role where you just kind of walk on. No, I totally get it because I think, well, it's because when it's done right, it's the best.
Yeah.
And when it's done right, you can like lock into a series like that.
Or Night of the Night of.
Hello.
Yeah.
I want to watch it 50 times. So this,
now I'm thinking of Jessica Biel and what's his name making out?
Justin Timberlake?
No.
That's her husband.
The Night of.
Riz Ahmed.
Yeah.
Oh, and you're just having personal fantasy.
Yes.
That's for your other podcast.
I'm cosplaying. Okay.
Also,
I'm sorry. I'm just going on.
You don't like Riz Ahmed because if you liked Riz Ahmed, you wouldn't immediately picture him making out with Jessica Biel.
And picture making out with myself?
Well, yeah. If you... So you're not.
He's a good-looking human.
Okay. I thought you were like, oh, I want his DNA inside me.
No, I meant that. And I want to have his baby because he's so handsome.
He's so beautiful.
Because he's so beautiful. And I bet the baby
would
be gorgeous.
You're using him.
Yes.
You're using him.
Using his DNA.
Oh my God. I'm totally telling him what you said. I'm so mad at you. Those are my only topics, Carvel and The Sinner.
Okay.
And I think we should probably watch some episodes while we eat Carvel ice cream.
Okay. Let's watch them right now. While we talk, what was I going to say? I have another thing, but I'm sure it's not important and weird.
Take a moment.
So stop and listen. You know how people love awkward, weird pauses in podcasts.
They never exist with Steven's wonderful work.
Editing.
It's editing, magic. Am I right?
Don't edit this out, Steven. The last one we actually did was, if I get it before you, Steven, you're fired. Okay, Weapon
no,
Bush.
No, you're going first.
Okay, you're not fired. All right. 1989. 20-year-old woman named Terry Knorr comes to the Utah police and she has a story for them. She tells them about how 8 years before, around, her mother and two brothers had killed both of her teenage sisters, Terry's teenage sisters, and left their bodies in the mountains near Lake Tahoe.
What?
Yeah.
The fuck?
Yeah. Tells them this. She's kind of like, you know, like a druggie, and she's been arrested for like shoplifting, so she's kind of on the outskirts of stuff, so they don't believe her. They're like, you're making shit up. And it's an insane story. So the cops don't believe her. A therapist and a lawyer that she consults don't believe her story. Yeah. So she's just like, well, fuck it. I don't know what to do then. But then in 1993, she watches an episode of America's Most Wanted, calls the hotline that they give, and is like, fuck it. Starts bawling. And I guess there's like a woman on the other end of the line who's like, oh my God. And they're like talking. And I'm like, how cool would it have been to be an America's Most Wanted fucking call center
operator?
Person? Can you imagine?
Cool. And then also, you would have talked to some of the craziest, you would have heard some of the craziest stories.
Definitely.
I should say it that way.
Would you rather be, well, I know the answer to this, a 911 operator or a call center? I know.
Or name anything
or
else.
Or anything else in the world.
Name anything else.
Okay, so she calls them, and this chick's like, whoa, that's crazy. They talk forever. She's like, well, why don't you go to the police station that this took, the precinct that this took place in? Because she lived in Utah then, and they didn't believe her. So she goes to the Placer County Sheriff and tells authorities what happened, and they start to realize that these details match with two cold cases that had happened 8 years before.
Oh shit.
And she's giving them details that fit so well that they can't not believe her.
I so badly right now want to see video of her to see what her behavior or
I can show it to you right now.
Clothing for real?
Cold case file.
Why don't they what about her do you think makes her so unbelievable to the authorities?
She definitely seems like the kind of person.
There's something about the sound of an old-timey cash register that really takes me back.
I know. It sounds like someone is about to hand me an ice cream cone, but it also sounds like we just sold some merch.
That's right. And if you're a Shopify user like us, you know that this sound means you just made a sale.
Shopify has helped millions of businesses sell their products online, but did you know they also offer the same support for brick and mortar stores?
From accepting payments to managing inventory, they have everything you need to sell in person. So give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify.
Shopify POS tracks sales across all your locations. That way, you'll always know what you have in stock and where.
They also provide reliable tech that fits your unique retail needs, like turning a tablet into a credit card reader.
And if you're looking to reach new customers, check out Shopify's marketing tools. They're easy to use, and they integrate with all social media platforms.
With Shopify, we have a powerful partner for managing our sales. And if you're a business owner, you can too.
Do retail right with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period today at shopify.com/murder. And here's the important note, that promo code is all lowercase.
So go to shopify.com/murder and take your retail business to the next level.
That's shopify.com/murder. Again, don't forget, the code is all lowercase.
Goodbye. Hey, Karen, you know that feeling when you're stressed out and your heart starts to pound and your mind is racing?
I do. I know it well.
Well, while there's no cure for stress, therapy can help shape your response to it. And since May is Mental Health Awareness Month, there's no better time to try Talkspace.
When you sign up for Talkspace, you'll receive a personalized match with a therapist or psychologist, typically within 48 hours.
Forbes rates Talkspace as the number one online therapy platform, plus their licensed professionals are in network with almost all major insurance companies.
Once you meet your therapy goals, or if you want to cancel for any reason, Talkspace will provide you with a prorated refund for unused time. I feel like these days people understand the importance of therapy, but the difficult part is just taking that first step. It took me months to make my first therapy appointment. I was so scared. I had a lot of ideas in my head about it. And that's why I think Talkspace is such a good idea, because making it so approachable will just get you there sooner. Then you can actually get in there, figure out what you need, talk to an actual professional, and be on your way to solving some stuff that you might want to solve.
To celebrate Mental Health Awareness Month and the power of talking it out in therapy, Talkspace is offering our listeners $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80.
Go to Talkspace.com/MFM and use promo code SPACE80.
To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/MFM and enter promo code SPACE80 and get $80 off your first month and show your support for our show.
That's Talkspace.com/MFM. Enter promo code SPACE80.
Goodbye.
She's talking about how she told everyone, she would tell anyone who listened this story. And they must have thought that, I could see people being like, this chick just fucking goes to a dive bar. She's a regular. She tells everyone the story. Nobody believes it. It's a crazy story.
So does she seem like an alcoholic or like she's a druggie or something?
Yeah, not anymore. Not when she's doing the actual episode. She seems like she's got her shit together. And she's actually incredibly believable.
Well, and also if you went through that.
Yeah.
You get to drink. Anything. Yeah, I mean, like, that's the irritating thing about those kinds of situations. You live through a trauma like that of like half your family killing the other half. And then you're supposed to just be like, oh no, I'm a really reliable witness because I'm totally in reality all the time.
And it's like, she's telling the story and she's not crying because she had to shut her emotions off from all of this so long ago that they're like, you're telling us a story and you're telling it matter of factly and we don't believe you. Like even a therapist who should be able to look past all this stuff.
Yeah.
And like, call the fucking Lake Tahoe PD and be like, hey, anyways, we'll get to her story and we can talk about that.
Okay.
There's two never identified Jane Does that kind of match and they're like, oh shit, we should look into this. So here's the story. So Terry's mom, her name's Teresa Knorr. She's born in Sacramento, California in 46. At age 16, she leaves home to marry a man 5 years older than her, who she had met a few months prior. She drops out of high school, she gets pregnant. So on July 6, 1964, that they're arguing, and the husband tells Teresa that he's leaving her. She gets so pissed off, she shoots him in the back with a rifle as he's walking out the door, killing him.
Holy shit.
Yeah. She's arrested and charged with his murder, but she says she's not guilty because it was self-defense. She says she doesn't tell them what happened, really. Like shooting someone in the back, how is that self-defense?
It doesn't look good.
No. But during her trial, she's pregnant with her second kid. And she claims that she shot him because he was a violent alcoholic who physically abused her, and she's acquitted of the murder. She gives birth to her second kid, Sheila, 65. And after that birth, she begins drinking super heavily, begins another relationship with a man named Robert Knorr. That's how she got her last name. She comes pregnant again. They have a third kid named Susan. Then they have three more children, William, Robert, and Teresa, that they named after her. And that's Terry. That's the girl who came.
Teresa Jr.
Teresa Jr.
Yeah, I got that.
As you do. As you
it's
name
kind
him.
Of cool.
Yeah. You know what? I really love the name Virginia. But if I ever have a kid, I can't name her Virginia because my name's Georgia and it would seem like I'm naming her after myself.
And this is my son, New Jersey.
Right. It's like, no, you can't do that.
No.
You're just vain. What if you had a daughter named her Karen?
Like, I would totally do that. I would do that in a heartbeat.
Well, there you go.
PJ, come on.
Eventually they divorce. She mates another man. They get married. 2 months later they divorce, and then this is when she starts to go fucking crazy. Okay. Says all the kids.
After her fourth divorce,
okay. Six kids, she goes nuts. She starts drinking more and more. She puts on a ton of weight and is super pissed off about it. She starts abusing her kids hardcore. Terry said, when we were kids, my mom beat the shit out of us. She's like kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Like you want to hang out with her when you see her in this Cold Case Files.
Okay. I'll watch it.
She's just like, well, she beat the ever loving fuck out of, like, she's just so matter of fact about it. But like, you could tell she's just like that friend that's intense and wants to have late night conversations with you about everything. If we hugged our mom too much, it was like, who were we trying to convince? that we loved her, she loved us. On the other hand, if we didn't hug her and kiss her and tell her we loved her, then we didn't love her and we were evil children. We were demon seeds that had been given to her by Bob Knorr. So she goes crazy and starts to think that her kids are like satanic.
Oh.
And she becomes reclusive and disconnected the home phone and wouldn't let the kids go out and or have visitors. They moved into a 2-bedroom apartment in Sacramento. Can you imagine 6 children and a mom in a 2-bedroom?
I lived in 2-bedroom apartments with 2 other roommates and we all wanted to kill each other the whole time.
Yeah.
Also, it's very hot there.
Sacramento?
Always.
Yeah. Probably didn't have AC.
Probably didn't. That will make you go crazy.
Swamp coolers? That's what you told me, right?
Yeah, we sit around in chairs right next to the swamp cooler with our armpits up on it.
I've never even heard
just
of
it. Just be like, let the sun go down.
Okay. The neighbor and the neighbors say the apartment was filthy and smelled like urine.
Oh.
So on top of all of that. So for years, Teresa abused and tortured her children, and it sounds horrific, including burning them with cigarettes, throwing knives at them, beating, and once grabbed Terry by the arm and held a .22 caliber pistol to her head and told her she was going to kill her.
So chances are that Terry, when she went to finally report this horrible thing, was totally shut down.
That's why I was like, she wasn't crying. Yeah. She was matter-of-factly telling the story, and it's like, well, yeah, at 7 years old or whatever, she was like, emotions are not going to help you.
No, I bet they count against you very badly.
Yeah.
With a mother like that.
Definitely.
Fuck.
So she had no emotional attachment to this story at that point, which is insane. This story reminds me of Sylvia Likens, that horrible story I covered a while ago.
Yeah.
In that the mom would make the other kids beat up one of them.
No, no.
So she would make them be involved in it so that they were part of it, you know? And that's probably part of why Terry was so fucking shut down, is like she kind of had a hand in it, in her mind thinking she was responsible too, even though you're obviously not.
Yeah.
So there's like talk of incest. It's brought up in like one or two articles, but the word incest comes up, but they don't go into details at all.
Yeah.
So I don't really know how truthful that is or to what extent that is. Let's see. Okay, so she primarily started to focus her anger and abuse on the two oldest daughters, Susan and Sheila. And according to Terry, Teresa resented that Susan and Sheila were maturing and becoming attractive young women while she was becoming older and couldn't lose any weight. Terry kind of explains it like that, but it's clearly so much more deep-seated than that. She's a monster and insane person.
And a bad alcohol, like a degenerating alcoholic.
Right.
And yeah, there's probably parts of her brain are going soft because of the drinking.
Yeah.
If it's been going on for long enough.
Yeah.
I learned that on Sober House. That can happen to you.
Really? How? Oh my God.
But
excuse me while I take a sip of my tea that's got whiskey in it.
But that makes perfect sense. And also, I bet you the sons, it's like every movie you've ever seen about an abusive parent where eventually the 16-year-old boy turns around and goes, I'll beat the shit out of you if you touch me again.
Right.
But the girls probably can't do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And and the boys, you know, start beating them up and probably avoid their mother beating the shit out of them because they're part of it. You know, it's really horrific.
Yeah.
Especially if, yeah. So because of this, she would start administering forced feedings to the girls, which, can you imagine that kind of fucking torture?
Sorry, because they were young and pretty and thin.
So she would give them forced feedings. She would make boxes and boxes of like mac and cheese, you know, like the mac and cheese, and put spoonfuls of lard in it. Sit there and make them eat all of it.
That and sucks.
To a point where one of the girls had her front teeth were broken because of the forcing her to eat.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's a hard thing to do.
To eat like that, or to break your teeth? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I've never done it.
Yeah. It's pretty solid.
Oh my God. Hold
Jesus
on.
Jesus Christ. All right.
And if you threw up, you had to eat it. Like you know, when you eat so much, you get full and it's so fucking painful and horrible. I think that to me is, it's such a telling torture.
Mm-hmm. But also it's so self-serving.
Yeah.
It's very fucked up.
It's really, really sad. So So Teresa started to believe that her fourth husband had turned Susan, one of the older daughters, into a witch. So she really received the worst of Teresa's abuse. After one severe beating, Susan ran away from home and she was picked up by police and placed in a psychiatric hospital. And she told the staff of the abuse at the hands of her mother. And Teresa denies the abuse and told the hospital staff that Susan had mental issues. So they didn't investigate and they released Susan back to her mother.
Oh.
As they do in the 80s.
Fuck.
Yep.
How old was Susan? Sorry.
I think she was a teenager. Mm. A lot of the details of like age and that and year and that sort of thing is hazy, probably because Terry's the one giving them the info and there's not a lot of.
Oh, right.
You know, there's not a lot of info to back it up. So it's hard to tell. So of course, Susan's super punished for this. She gets beatings while they wear a pair of leather gloves, which I don't understand. Like, this part is in a couple of the articles.
It makes it more painful or something?
I would imagine, right?
I don't know.
I thought maybe you would know, like, oh yeah, leather, whatever.
Not slapping with gloves like a British gentleman would.
No, they like put leather gloves on and beat her up. I wonder if it like delivers a punch heart? I don't know. Someone will tell us. She also forced her. Okay, so they all had to beat her up. She got handcuffed to the bed and the other children had to stand guard and watch her. Make sure she can get out of there.
The handcuffs aren't enough.
I know. She makes her drop out of school. Everyone drops out of school and they're all in like high school. None of them got past eighth grade.
Oh no.
So this all happened before eighth grade.
Oh fuck.
Yeah.
That's really young. Okay.
Very. And they were homeschooled, of course, based on the Bible. And they had, and Teresa had a thing called the Board of Education. And it was a paddling board that said the Board of Education on it. And they did something wrong.
I've heard of that.
Have you?
Yeah, people's parents having that.
Really?
Yep. It's a funny, abusive pun.
Oh, I know. It's cute. It's cute. It's like makes it. Man, I got hit with a wooden spoon as a kid a lot. And it is so fucking painful.
Is it really?
It's like a cute thing.
Right.
That like you gotta spank your children and everyone acts like this is how you teach them how to be a good person.
Nope.
So I got spanked a lot as a kid with both a wooden spoon and a hand.
Mm-hmm.
It fucking hurts and it's terrifying and the parent is really pissed off while they're doing it. So it's not like a teaching you a lesson. It's I am so fucking angry at you.
That's an adult out of control.
Yeah.
With a child.
Yeah.
Well, and also it was very fucking common back then.
Yeah.
It was not only common for people to get, abused.
Legitimately.
Like
they didn't think, they still, a lot of people don't think that's abuse.
Right. But also other people's parents would slap kids.
Yeah.
Or, you know, spank them.
Yeah.
It was always this idea of spanking like on the butt was less bad.
They call it a smack. I don't know. Why am I oversharing this stuff?
Well, it's very relevant.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it brought up, this story brought up a lot of shit for you.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
Yeah. I hope my mom doesn't sue me. Defamation. Shit. No one's going to go to fucking Little House of Horticultures. Yeah. Damn it. Should I not? Okay. It's going to go in my memoir anyways. Might as well say it on the podcast. No, I'm kidding. Okay. So let's get to the fucking shit. They're having an argument in 1983. Teresa shoots Susan in the chest. During this argument.
Fuck.
The bullet gets lodged in her back. Teresa makes the sons put her in the bathtub.
Good.
And Susan gets nursed back to health by her mother.
What?
Yep. She doesn't die.
But it all takes place at home.
Yeah.
Good God. And it's a hellhole.
Yeah. And Terry says that this was the only time that she didn't see her mother hitting Susan. So it was almost like nursing her back to health. Made her feel motherly and needed, and so she wasn't abusive.
Fuck.
Isn't that insane?
That's, where were the fucking neighbors? Or, I mean, gunshots are taking place?
Yeah. Well, the house, they showed a photo of the house that they moved into, the, like, two-bedroom. It definitely looks secluded.
Oh.
Like, in a Sacramento kind of way.
I was picturing it as, like, apartments.
No. Yeah. Okay. It's they call it an apartment, but it's not.
Okay.
It's like a two-bedroom, small place.
Okay.
And it looks like it's, you know, out in wherever.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know. So, okay. So she's nursed back to health. She survives. And in 1984, she works up the courage and tells her mom she wants to move out. And Teresa says, okay, you can move out, but you have to let me remove the bullet from your back. Because if you tell on me, that can be used as evidence.
Oh my gosh.
This is horrific, right?
It's unbelievable.
I know. I was like, maybe this week I'll do like an old timey murder that's like a little more.
Nope.
And then I was like, oh, I found this and yeah. I have to do it.
It's incredible. It's insane.
Susan agrees. They put her down on the kitchen floor. And Terry says, I was basically the nurse. I had to administer all these things. But either the brother or Teresa took the bullet out. I can't really tell. But they fed her a ton of liquor and malarial capsules. Do you know what those are? No. Imagine they're a sleeping pill. Till she's out cold. And okay. Then take the bullet out.
Okay.
And flush it down the toilet.
All right.
Infection sets in. Susan's skin turns yellow from jaundice. They handcuff her to the kitchen table and she lays dying on the floor. This gets really horrific. Teresa tells her kids that Susan was possessed by Satan and the only way to purge the demon was with fire.
Oh no.
She makes Robert and Bill, the brothers, drive Susan to Sierra Nevada, Interstate 80. Do you know where that is?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like out in the wilderness, right?
Yes. Okay. Well, the 80, if from Sacramento, you take the 80, then you're, I think,
like
yeah,
farmland and wilderness. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's on the way up to the mountains. Like,
yeah.
If I'm not.
That sounds
wrong,
right.
It's like toward Roseville.
Okay. All right. They had packed all of her possessions into trash bags. They pull over. They put the trash bags down. They put Susan on top of them. Then they poured gasoline and they lit her on fire.
Is she still alive?
Yeah. Fuck. I wasn't going to say anything.
Well, you have to tell the whole story.
I know.
You have to tell the whole story.
I know. And I think she was... Like, to me, nothing is worse than... Those, for some reason, are the worst to me. Is being lit on fire.
By your fucking family?
Yeah, but dying of fire to me is specifically horrific.
Yeah.
I can't, that's like the one I can't really think about. And I'm doing a story about it. And just a warning on Cold Case Files, they show her.
Oh.
They show the fucking crime scene photos. So, she's found, they put the fire out, they have no idea who she is. They think that, okay, they have no idea who she is. They make a drawing of what they think that she looks like. Fucking case goes cold. They have no idea who she is.
Oh.
And back at home, so it's the like a year later, late spring of 85, Teresa starts to make her 20-year-old daughter, Sheila, work as a sex worker. She, like, pimps her out.
Mm.
And she's earning hundreds of dollars a day, and Teresa almost seems like she's proud of her. And she eased up on the daily beatings, and Sheila's actually allowed to come and go as she pleases.
Wow.
Which is rare. And then Teresa accuses Sheila of giving Teresa an STD through the toilet seat. And so she beats her, hog ties her, and locks her in a like tiny broom closet. It's hot as fuck. There's no ventilation.
Oh.
And she forbids her other children to give Sheila food or water or to open the closet door. And Terry, one day when she was gone, disobeys her and gives her a beer, which is almost like, you can imagine that's probably all there was in the house.
Yes.
And she's this like kid, this teenage kid who's like, doesn't know what else to do. Here's a beer. So Teresa just said she wanted Sheila to confess. But either way, she's going to get beaten. And so she does confess. She doesn't believe her.
Ugh.
And so, she eventually dies in the closet.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So 3 days later, she dies of dehydration and starvation. They leave her body in the closet for an additional 3 days before even discovering that she's dead. So the mom and son puts the body, her body, in a cardboard box, tapes it shut, and they take it to the mountains where they dumped it near Truckee, the Truckee airport. Mm-hmm. And then they get back to the apartment and realize the smell hasn't gone away. And so Teresa orders Terry to set the apartment on fire.
This woman is a fucking lunatic.
Guess what? She's still alive.
What?
She's still alive. Teresa.
Oh,
mom.
Oh, oh.
The lunatic mom.
Oh, to this day?
Yeah.
Oh, for a second I was like, that was like the crazy twist.
No. Okay. There's sadly no crazy twist.
Okay.
But the dying and dead is done at this point.
I mean, this is
how
pure...
have we not heard about this?
I know. Like, when you said the name, it sounds familiar.
Well, it's how have you not heard about this?
I know.
Isn't that crazy?
It sounds super familiar, but yeah, but I don't know these details at all. But
this might be when your parents were not watching the news for a while.
Yeah, but 85. That I would have if I heard that on the news then, I would have been like.
But here's the thing about 85 is that those are just when the bodies were found. Two separate bodies in different counties.
Oh, and there
counties,
were cold cases.
And there were cold cases, right. And they weren't even linked.
Okay.
I think that the investigator on Cold Case Files was like, yeah, we talked to them and we're like, this is weird. But they died in totally different ways. But there were two young teenagers, but they didn't put it together.
Fuck.
Yeah. So you wouldn't have heard much.
Okay, that's
and
right.
This. She didn't come forward until 93. But you were in Sacramento then.
Stop it. I couldn't have known.
Oh, I'm not blaming you. I'm just talking about how fucking weird it is that this is like one of the most insane cases I've ever heard of child abuse, and we've never heard of it.
Right. I was in San Francisco by 93. Okay.
Which just makes me want, that made me want to tell the story more because it's like,
no, I can see it.
How the fuck?
Because it's this weird, oh my God, like that idea of the crazy alcoholic mom that like keeps everybody in the house, like no one's in school and it's just mayhem.
An ugly, sad place of constant torture.
And someone that just shoots people. Like what? I mean,
kills her own. It's just so crazy that it's one person against five, and she is so manipulative and insane and dangerous and scary that she's able to tell her sons to go kill their sister and they obey.
It's their mother.
Yeah.
It's their primary. Yeah. It's horrible.
Yeah. And it's all they've ever known.
Yeah.
All right. So she tells her to light the apartment on fire. In the middle of the night, she sprinkles lighter fluid around the apartment and lights it on fire, but it didn't spread because I think there were neighbors. So apparently there were neighbors. Who knows? So the fire department responds. There's not a lot of damage. Sheila's body is discovered a few hours after it had been disposed of in the box by fucking poor fishermen. Jesus, can you imagine? And they show that too on Cold Case Files. Like, I was so surprised, and I was sitting here with Vince, and he looks up right when that happens, and I was like, don't look. So I was like, don't look because you're going to think I'm fucking insane that I'm watching this. He doesn't want to see. He like went in the other room.
He also knows you're insane.
Yes.
But just quick FYI. He does.
You're right. He likes wrestling. So. Just,
exactly. Everybody's got their thing.
Yeah, right. Okay. They, again, classified as a Jane Doe. After leaving the Sacramento apartment, they all go into hiding. They finally, the lighting on fire is finally their ticket out of there. And they all break up and spread around. And she and Terry gets to escape her mom.
Wow.
At 16. The mom relocates to Vegas with one of the sons, Robert Knorr. And in 91, he's arrested after fatally shooting a bartender in a Las Vegas during an attempted robbery.
I mean, so like, these are born and bred criminals that are like, now go out into the world to just reign free.
Yeah. Good luck with having any kind of normal life.
Yeah, any conflict you have, you're going to start shooting people.
Yeah. Terry, I mean, God bless her. She seems like she was able to straighten her fucking life out.
Wow.
It's unbelievable that she is able. I mean, watch it just to like hear her talk.
I can't wait.
So they move back. Then they move to, so he goes to prison for 16 years. Mom relocates to Salt Lake City, where she becomes a caretaker, an elderly woman's caretaker.
What?
This dude hires her to take care of his mother, ailing mother, lives there. And when she, okay, let me keep telling this.
Okay. That's going to turn out bad, right?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. It turns out, and we had no idea. You know what I mean? Yeah. So no one else gets killed.
Okay, good.
So Terry takes Sheila's identification card to pass herself off as a legal adult. Like, she becomes, you do what you got to do.
Yes.
So when she finally goes to share her story and they finally believe her because of her detailed descriptions down to the chipped teeth of the Jane Doe they had, because the box that Sheila was put in, they knew was, that was the only piece of evidence they had. It was a box from a movie theater of like popcorn buckets. So they went to every movie theater and was like, is this your brand? Is this your box? And it wasn't. And it turns out that Robert worked at a movie theater when they, and had taken the box from a movie theater. So even that corroborated everything, just these details, everything matched. So the detectives also took out the subfloor that had been stained with Sheila's body to test it. And in November 93, Teresa Knorr is arrested at her home in Salt Lake City, where she fucking lives with this elderly mother. And the son who had hired her was like, we had no idea she was a sweet old lady. Yeah, she did some weird shit. And she said she liked taking care of my mom because she had, or she liked, she was like really motherly to my grandkid, to my children who were daughters, because she said she had always wanted a daughter of her own and only had sons.
Oh my
God. So he didn't believe it for a long time.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cause like you left, you're like the guilt over leaving your mom with a fucking murderer.
Yeah.
Gotta be pretty high.
Yeah. You got to turn around and face that.
Ooh, you're not a good judge of character, it turns out.
It turns out you don't know your shit.
You thought you were, you ain't.
Engage your gut.
Yeah. Listen to your heart.
Eyes open, please.
Eyes open. Heart.
Make a reference. See, these days we have LinkedIn. That would never happen. Okay, go ahead.
She's charged with 2 counts of murder, 2 counts of conspiracy to commit murder, 2 special circumstance charges, multiple murder and multiple murder by torture. Mm. William is sentenced to probation to undergo therapy for participating in Sheila's murder. And in exchange for his testimony, the prosecution dropped all charges against Robert, save for 1 count of being an accessory after the fact in Sheila's murder. And also the mom was like, I'll plead guilty. Teresa was like, I'll plead guilty if you let my sons off.
Really?
Which I have a hard, okay, here's where I have a hard time with. Do the sons deserve anything?
I mean,
at what point in their age?
I feel like I am not qualified to debate that in any way, except for,
I just want to bring it up because I can't give a judgment either way.
Well, my first reaction is, they don't, because they were raised to kill people. This woman had no choice.
It was out of fear at that point and mind control that they did it.
Yes. And just the taught reactions of this is normal living.
Yeah.
But when you say that, then you basically, there's so many murderers that you can say that about.
Right.
Because they had equally nightmarish childhoods.
Yeah. So they could actually, yeah, exactly.
It's nothing is black and white.
Right. So like, yeah, Ted Bundy was like abused and sexually molested, but he's still held responsible for what he did. It's almost like, well, at the point where they're 18 and on, then are they responsible?
No. I think for Ted Bundy, I think it's like, once you've killed your 12th woman, it's on you.
Okay.
No, I mean, I'm saying these boys, I don't think they would have lived these lives.
Definitely not.
They wouldn't have killed their own sisters if their mother didn't make them participate.
Definitely.
I would guess that. I mean, that's
like, to me, it's like the beatings and that sort of thing. No, they're not held responsible for that. But
the murder's the same. It's all the mother's doing.
I know. And I know people are going to argue with me and be like, you're victim blaming for sure.
Right.
Which I understand. And I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just like, at what point is there a period at the end of they're not?
Well, that's what judges and juries and all those, the people right. that look at all the information,
definitely.
That's the point.
Definitely.
Where they go, okay, is this a person that had, you know, was forced into this horrible life, an entire lifestyle? Is this person that liked it?
Yeah.
Is this a person that didn't just kill sisters, but then went on and attacked people in the neighborhood or like.
And wanted, and it's, yeah. So Teresa pleads guilty because of that, and on the condition also that she was spared the death penalty, just like, fuck you. That I can be like, period about, fuck you. In October 95, she's sentenced to 2 consecutive life sentences. She's incarcerated in California Institute for Women in Chino. So she's fucking in, is that the Inland Empire? She's in the fucking
Chino?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It might be. She'll be eligible.
We should go there.
We should go there now and go to Ivy League school. She'll be eligible for parole in 2027. If she lives to see it, she'll be 80 years old.
Oh, shit.
She's still alive.
I wonder if she's drinking inside in the clink.
Some fucking... some wine?
Some toilet wine?
Oof. Would you take a sip of that if someone made you? Not made you, but if you were, like, dared?
No, I don't really respond to daring. That's not my jam.
Yeah, you don't seem like a person who
no.
would be challenged.
No, no. I mean... are you saying would I even be curious about the experience of what toilet wine tastes like?
I guess the word toilet is a hard no.
It ruins it. I mean, would I have
prison eaten wine in a bucket, maybe.
Prison wine in a bucket that's quite clean.
Yeah.
The first time ever the bucket was used was for the prison wine.
Yeah, which I'm sure they have access to clean buckets.
Then yes, because I'm sure there's a whole program set up. But I would want to taste what non-toilet created prison wine tasted like.
I agree. And
that would be fascinating.
I can't imagine there's a ton of prisoners who are like, yes to toilet wine themselves. I'm an alcoholic, but I won't fucking drink. No, I'm going to say no to toilet wine.
Who knows?
Who knows?
I mean.
But anyway.
You got to do what you got to do.
Fuck Teresa Knorr.
God, that was crazy. She's awful.
Awful. It's watch the cold case file.
I will.
And did you know they're all streaming on, you can get them on demand somewhere. Not on demand, but like on your DVR.
Mm-hmm.
No, wait. On like,
if you have DirecTV
Roku
or
Apple or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Every single one is on except for that one.
Are you serious?
So I had to go to YouTube to find it. It's on YouTube. It's called Mommy something. Look up Cold Case Files Mommy. It's season 2, episode 24.
It's so dark. It makes it extra dark when you're from the place where you hear the story, because you can I can picture her house dress.
I kept asking, like, me in it. I was like, I'm going to ask Karen where this is. This is insane.
Yeah.
I can picture her house dress, like a flowery nurse's, like, big,
dirty, kind of like country powder blue.
Yeah. Slipper, like little tiny flowers on it.
Yeah.
Slippers. Essentially what I fucking wear every day. Let's be honest.
Oh man, it's
she
dark.
Bought it at Pick and Save.
It's dark. There's bad vibes. Well, these are just because people very often tweet us, have you read this, have you seen this, and there are things that are happening modern day,
right?
And they're often like the craziest or the most fascinating kind of true crime of today. And we don't always talk about it, which I know it's like, it's what a lot of people are in it for.
Yeah, and I wish we could do... There's so many of those. I'm like, this is insane, but there's no details yet.
Exactly. It's a breaking story.
Right.
So what I did was I started my This Week's Murder... I wasn't making any good kind of like strategic decisions as I was watching the case, because I stumbled upon a BBC show that... It was a Reddit link to a BBC show called BBC Horizons that I think has been on in England for a long time.
Ooh.
This is what it looked like, uh-huh. Because there's like each one had different opening credits, that one looked like 1978 and one looked like the 90s.
It's like they're unsolved mysteries. It's been on forever.
And so it was like the mystery of blank. So like there's a thing in Florida called the Florida Circle. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but I was watching half of that when I was like, stop watching TV. Because it was like,
oh my God, can you get it online? I mean, where can you get it?
It's just put into, See, here's the problem. It was a Reddit link. So I was watching off of that. And then suddenly the title started turning Russian writing. And then at one point I tried to click off, and then it turned into like a Russian looking Facebook page.
Uh-oh.
Did
you get hacked?
It said something like the name of it. It wasn't Facebook. It was like, okay, summertime. And then I was like, oh, I should throw this computer away.
Absolutely.
Now.
They're watching you.
But now, I only have half my script done. So I have to keep it for a little while. But I mean, like, yeah, I made a terrible, you don't click links on Reddit, but I did.
Yes, you do.
Well, anyway,
that's fun part of Reddit.
It makes it exciting. Yeah. So anyway, the story that I was watching and going to do isn't really a murder. Like, it's a fascinating story about a mummy that they found in in Iran that, or the seller was in Iran that had it, and it turned out it was from Pakistan, and that was, it was like, it was very newsworthy because the only mummies have ever been from Egypt. Egypt is the only place that did ancient mummification ritual.
So this one might have been stolen?
So, well, they didn't know, and it was like, look, kind of weird and different. And then you see it. It's like, it drew me in so quickly. And then it was like, but it turned into a like ancient Persia fucking Xerxes. Like it was the reading, the cuneiform writing on it said that it was the daughter of Xerxes, who was the ruler of the Persian Empire. Mm. I mean, it's all this shit. I have no idea what I'm actually saying right now.
Smart. You sound really smart.
The BBC can do that for you.
Yeah, they can. I'm going to
watch
this.
One special. Anyway, it turned out, so this woman who's actually, I mean, I guess I'll just, I wasn't going to talk about this one at all, but it's really cool because the woman who started looking into it was a scientist named Asma Ibrahim. Ooh. And she taught herself how to read cuneiform so that she could figure out what it said on the stone coffin part.
Oh my God.
And then that's how she figured out it said, I'm the daughter of Xerxes. So it was this Persian princess.
Georgia, have you ever been blown away by the most simple dish at a restaurant, like perfectly scrambled eggs?
Oh my God, yes, Karen. And then all I want to do is make that dish at home and eat it every day.
Well, you probably could, as long as you have the chef's secret ingredient, Made In cookware.
Made In was created to bring restaurant quality performance kitchenware to home chefs around the world.
For years, they've built their business by supplying restaurants and top chefs with high-end cookware. Some of Tom Colicchio's most treasured dishes at his restaurant Kraft are made in Made In.
Whether you're cooking for professional critics or just the critics you live with, your meals will benefit from the quality of Made In products.
Like their carbon steel cookware, it combines the best of both cast iron and stainless steel clad, so it's rugged enough for grills or an open flame. It's the MVP of summer cookouts and cook-ins. What I really love about Made In cookware is that it actually makes something like having a Memorial Day barbecue much more convenient because you can keep everything on the grill. If you need to throw, say, a pan of garlic up on the top while you're grilling your steaks on the bottom, it's strong enough, durable enough to do that.
If you want to take your cooking to the next level, remember what so many great dishes have in common. They're all Made In, Made In.
Save up to 25% this Memorial Day from May 18th through May 27th when you visit madeincookware.com.
That's M-A-D-E-I-N cookware.com. Goodbye.
It's from the ancient Persian Empire. But then she was like looking at all the details, whatever. She's sending things off to experts all around the world. So they have the cuneiform expert in London. They send the mat that's underneath the actual mummy off to get carbon dated.
Wow.
They do all these things, right? And then there is a scientist that's in, I think he's the leading archaeologist in Iran. And he's the one that came out and said, we don't have mummies in Iran and they don't have them in Pakistan. They are only from Egypt. Therefore, if this is a Persian princess, then that changes like history books.
Yeah.
That means that there must be, it was just this whole thing, right? Well, then as the information starts to come back and this Dr. Ibrahim is investigating everything, she's starting to notice little like quirky things are standing out.
Inconsistencies?
Yeah. So the cuneiform looks weird and she, you know, that's why she sent it to the guy in London that was the expert. And she, you know, there's, like that little differences in the mummification process or whatever. And eventually they come to find out they send it off to get x-rayed because they were like, well, in the Egyptian mummification process, they empty out the body of the internal organs. They dry out the inner body. They put a drying agent in it. They put the heart back in because the heart is where your brain, they believed your brain was.
So they just cram that brain out.
You got to have that brain. They pull your actual brain out.
Through your nose, right?
Yep. They stick a thing in there and they basically mix your brain around until it's jelly.
No.
And your brain runs out your nose.
No, 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 no.
Yes. And But you still have your heart, which is your real brain, which I thought was very beautiful.
Yeah.
And yeah. So when they x-rayed it, the heart was in there. It was no, there were no internal organs. It was all the things. The brain was, you know, whatever. But they start to notice, like, the Egyptians, it was very, it's like surgical precision. Mm-hmm. So the incision that they would make to take the inner organs out was 3 inches. This one was 8. Okay. On this body.
So it's a novice.
Right. They, the Egyptians would go up the nose to do that mixing thing with the brain. They, on this mummy, had broken all these bones up in the palate. So they had done it. It's not the way.
Yeah.
Because this was like a sacred ritual. Sure. So they don't just like fuck it up.
Right. Especially if it's like a princess.
Especially, yes, exactly. Especially Xerxes' daughter. He was, from according to that one
huge
movie, he was humongous. Okay, so then Dr. Asma Ibrahim finds pencil lines on the outer wooden box. Pencils were invented 250 years ago. Or 300 years ago, I think she said. Or they said. Lead pencils.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're like, this is a total, this is bullshit. Mm-mm. Then they get the carbon dating from the mat that was underneath the mummy back, and it was made 50 years ago.
Wow.
So they're like, what the fuck is this? So then they get a doctor to cut it open. And, oh, also they had taken CT scans to, so they could see inside, like the x-ray. The x-ray shows you like through, but then the CT scans, it's like if you got cut all the way down, they can see each individual slice.
Yes.
And that's how they discovered that the body that had been mummified, the spine was broken in two places at the neck and at the lower back. And
oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah. So they're like, okay, this is not this Persian princess. What was her name? Like Rodriga or something really hard to pronounce. And they open up the mummy. And you can see it on this show.
It's
so fucking
my
cool.
My toes are curling.
Cut it open. This doctor, they have to saw it open like with a bone saw.
Because it's mummified?
Well, because the outer cloth that the mummy is wrapped in. So you're bandaged like a Halloween mummy inside. Your arms are crossed over your chest. That's how you know it's royalty.
Huh.
And then they wrap the whole body in a resin saturated cloth.
Right, so it hardens.
And that's what makes it hard.
Got it.
So they have to cut that open. They pull it apart and it had gray hair.
Huh.
And it was a woman. And they actually made a computer generated image of what her face might look like based
that's
on.
That's so cool when they do that.
I know, right? Based on the skull and then based on the area that they said it was found, which was near the Afghan border. They're like, women of this age usually look like this.
Yeah, yeah.
So now they have a murder case on their hands.
Shut your fuck. So when is she from?
What's that?
When is she from?
She had only died. So they mummified the body. Like when they discovered all this, they backdated. It was like, she'd only died 4 years ago or something. And
so someone went and got their mat from their back porch.
Yep. Wait, let me see.
I don't know why that's just such a weird part to me where it's like, well, we got to put her on a mat.
Yeah. Why they didn't. Oh, she died in 1996.
Holy shit.
That's what they found out. But I can't remember. I don't have it where that compares to what, but basically what happened is in the mummification process, they had to collect all their, they had to make their plan. They had to assemble the team of stonemasons and these forgers and all these people that would be able to make this mummy look so realistic. Mm-hmm. 'Cause when you see it, it's actually really beautiful and cool looking. There's like, they have this gold, it's like a crown of cypress trees as her crown.
Oh, wow.
And then this face mask that they basically made, it's based on a different mummy, very early mummy's face mask. So it doesn't look like King Tut.
Yeah.
It's much more like handmade looking. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. They basically just had these perfect forgers and then just made these little tiny mistakes.
A lot of people were in on it.
A lot of people were in on it. And then they don't know if they robbed a grave to get like the freshest body or if they killed somebody. But the person who died, died violently, which is why they think it's a murder case.
I am in shock right now.
Isn't it nuts?
That is the craziest story.
Here's the other thing. Since this time, two more quote-unquote Persian mummies have been offered on the black market for $6 million each. When this one showed up first,
Sell a mummy.
What's that?
You can sell a mummy
on the black market. Oh, black market for antiquities. You can do anything you want because it's just people robbing places and then selling these.
That's why they're artifacts. That's why they're tomb robbers and shit.
Right. This mummy was estimated, they were getting prices up to $1 billion because this mummy was so groundbreaking of like, oh my God, there's never been a Persian mummy before.
I wonder if they'd even buy it if they knew it was a fake because it's just done so well.
There's a murdered body inside of it.
Yeah. People who buy black market mummies give a shit?
Yeah, I think they'd still want it to be a legit mummy. Because also then you're spending all that money. They're spending that money for the history of it. They want that, like, this is from the sands of time or whatever.
I bet
this
someone
is, like,
would take a fucking fat discount to be like, no, this is just a really well done forge. Hurry.
But of a dead person.
Hey, man. And they're like, yeah, give me some coke while you're in this. Some heroin.
Oh, because they're just into bad stuff?
Because they're black market. I think of black market buyers and sellers as like scary spies. Like they're not.
It's
not historians.
Not in the least. You know what? You just provided me my transition.
Oh,
now
rad.
I'm going to tell you this next story.
Okay.
Did you hear about this one? The 20-year-old British model who she went to Milan because she believed that she had gotten a modeling job.
And she did, and it went great.
Yeah, it went great. And now she is Carla Devigny. I don't know how to say her name. She had an agent that sent her, and the agent, whose name is Phil Green, said that this was a recognized studio in the city center of Milan. So he didn't think he was sending her to some fly-by-night thing.
Sure. Plus, like, you're like, someone's paying to send me to Milan. Like, this has to be legit.
Yeah. When she gets there, a man grabs her by the neck. One man grabs her by the neck. Another one injects her with a dose of anesthetic of ketamine. So much of it that it knocks her to the ground. Then she gets put into a suitcase.
No, not small places, please.
Yes.
This small model, places?
Yep. And then they drive her around winding unpaved roads for more than 2 hours, bound hand and foot with tape across her mouth.
Oh, my God.
She's taken to a rural house in northern Italy, and she's kept handcuffed to a wooden dresser. And then she is put on sale online. On the dark web.
Dude, this dark web.
The dark web. She's put on sale, but then at the same time, a ransom demand gets sent to her agent for $300,000.
Okay, so he knows at this point. Sounds, for how much?
$300,000.
That's not a lot of money. Right?
I mean, yeah, you'd think if you're going to do a crime like this, you might want to...
What if he's like, okay.
Just shoot for the moon.
Yeah.
When she's stuck there, she tells him she has a child, the man that's there. And so then he puts her back in the suitcase. I think he does. And drives her to the British embassy in Milan.
Why is this funny?
He drops her off at the British embassy.
Because she has a kid?
Yeah. And he reported that killing mothers was against the rules of the shadowy criminal organization that this guy belonged to.
What?
They end up arresting him.
They were going to sell her for sex or to be murdered? Like, this was someone they were selling to get killed.
Do they sell people just to be killed?
Probably. I don't know.
I don't either. I'm sure for sex or to be a sex slave or to be trafficked.
Right.
Have some terrible thing happen.
You know, I mean, it's so sad because if we're hearing about this story, there's a million others that didn't end up. Like
right.
This.
How many people that don't have agents, that don't have anybody that are like, oh, somebody thinks I'm a model.
Or money to pay ransom.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So the guy's name is Lucas Powell Herba, and he's from He's a Polish citizen with British residency. Uh-huh. And he's the one that drops her off. And then he later gets arrested.
Oh my God.
And they also were holding her passport so she couldn't leave the country until she gave evidence at her pretrial hearing.
What?
Because when she told the story, they didn't believe her.
Are you fucking... They wouldn't let her go home.
Right. Because they were like, we have to see what's going on. We don't understand what this is all about. And then it turned out that her agent, the cops, like everybody were and then the guy that did it were all telling the exact same story. And they were like, okay, it really happened.
I hope they apologized. Say you're sorry.
That's what's important.
Milan, say you're sorry.
Okay.
Wow, that's awful.
Are you ready for the next one?
Absolutely.
And Stephen, tell me when I go too long, because it might be too long.
No, we're stupid.
Okay.
Four hours later.
This for real. So this is my favorite because for like in the early 2000s, there was a viral video that like an apartment website put out that had a girl. It looked like night vision video, and it was a girl coming out of a cupboard in an apartment in New York. And it was this story, quote unquote, was that she was living in the apartment and they didn't know.
Yeah.
Well, that was all viral. That was all fake.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Cause she kind of had like long black,
Like the ring girl hair. Japanese horror film.
Totally. And she crawled out in the scariest way.
Yeah.
And I was when we found that video and didn't know, we watched it at work 50 times. We would just stand around screaming and watching. It was amazing. Yeah. I mean, it was an amazing piece of,
literature
fiction.
Yeah.
Well, here's a story I found. This happened in, Pittsburgh. Jerome Kennedy decided to install a camera inside his attic after he was hearing noises coming from the ceiling above his bedroom.
No.
According to police. He called them a few days earlier because he heard someone up there at night, but they didn't find anything. So he decided to put cameras in his attic.
What would you do?
To see what was going on.
I would leave.
And
everything.
I certainly wouldn't take the time to put cameras in, but no. He did it. And when he gets the footage back, the footage shows his neighbor, Robert Havrilla, crawling through the attic. So they live in, like a split, condo thing where they share a wall. And he has gone up into his attic and then crawled over into this guy's side.
No.
And, he's carrying, in the video, you can see him. It's so fucking creepy.
How have I not seen this?
He's carrying a drill and a light. And then he just lies on the vent that overlooks Kennedy's bed and his daughter's crib for about, what does that say? For about 30 minutes. He just looks through the vent for half an hour.
You're just being watched sleeping.
Yeah.
What if he just was like, it relaxes me. A nice, a sweet baby. A little sweet baby.
I like to see other people's lives. Yeah. I'm not perverted.
Not even when they're awake. I just want to see how happy they look when they're sleeping.
The man who did it's attorney who got caught on video, told the Washington Post, that he has no criminal record whatsoever. And they're making this seem like a negative situation, but it's really not. Some things that haven't been said that'll clear everything up eventually.
Oh, okay.
So what are some of those things?
You're mentally ill?
He was installing a mobile for that baby. But he just wanted to make sure.
Oh, can you imagine walking into your daughter's bedroom in the morning and there's just a mobile that's not...
That you didn't put there.
A surprise mobile.
With the scariest
mobile.
Music.
It's just all fucking skeletons and nightmares. Mobile? It's just got nightmares.
God bless. That's my favorite.
Did he go to jail? Do they still live next door to each other?
He didn't do anything wrong, according to his lawyer. Why would he go to jail? He didn't. It's a super positive situation.
It's not negative. It's positive.
To be crawling in the attic with a drill. Okay. Here's the last one. This is insane and awful. And you probably heard about it because a bunch of people sent us this one from the BBC News. Oh, that, sorry, that was from the Washington Post. The story of the man in the attic was from the Washington Post. And the first, the mummies from BBC Horizon, the Horizon series, which
my new favorite show.
It is. Their stuff on it was so cool. I want to watch all of them.
It reminds me of Stephen. What was that book you got us? The Lifetime. Mysteries of the Unexplained.
Yeah. From the like with the cover, like the leather covers and the different
Time
things.
Life series.
Time Life series. That's what it reminds me of. Can I tell you my new favorite show?
Yeah.
Really quickly, I meant to tell you about this earlier. It's called Suddenly Rich. It's like on TLC and it's just people who suddenly win, like get a windfall, and it's like these
and how they can't handle it,
how happy it makes their lives. It's just like, if you are reading about murder and you need a positive thing, it's like one guy who, like, you had a throw at a basketball game, all these like shots, and if you did it, you won all this money, and he was like a poor kid from like South America who had come on a scholarship and had to work his ass off, and then like suddenly won this money. And this woman who found like a painting in the trash in New York, and it was worth $1 million. Like, it's just this like super cool show.
That's the best,
dude.
Finding, like, did you see the documentary about the lady that who found the Jackson Pollock painting?
Yeah, no, I didn't see it, but it was similar to that, where it's this like famous artist, and it turned out it was stolen and all this crazy shit.
Yes,
that's cool. So Suddenly Rich.
Suddenly
when,
Rich.
When you need a fucking break.
It's not about my Uncle Rich. Okay. okay, so this one is fucked up. It happened in Denmark. A respected freelance journalist named Kim Wall, who was researching a feature about a man named Peter Madsen, who had built his own private 40-ton submarine.
What?
Called the UC-3 Nautilus. Yes.
Oh, I did hear this one.
He built that through crowdfunding in 2008, and she went down to meet him to take a tour. It's not supposed to like hold people, but like they can show.
She was writing about it.
She was doing like a human interest piece.
That's what's so troubling to me about this one, is that like, I wouldn't be like, don't go alone. It's like, you're a journalist and you're writing a piece about this person.
A person who runs two companies and is a very relatively public figure in his country.
For as much as we're like, be careful, don't trust anyone, it's like, but yeah, there's certain situations where you'd be like, well, of course it's fine.
It's her job. But okay, so so she meets him there. She's last seen alive August 10th as she departs with Mr. Madsen on his self-made underwater vessel.
Fuck.
She met him around 7 o'clock on Thursday. In the harbor area of Copenhagen, and she got on the submarine. The last picture of the two of them were in the sub's conning tower, taken by a man from a cruise ship. So they saw the little submarine out there,
and
people were taking pictures of them.
I didn't know that. There's a photo of them?
Of the two of them on the submarine, yeah. Yeah. And, it's like right before sunset, and this is all on the internet. You can see all these pictures. But then, Kim Wall's partner reported her missing, the next morning. I believe it was 2:30 in the morning when she never came back from this trip. So, initially, Peter Madsen, told everybody that he had dropped, Ms. Wall off after dark. That night at the Halvandet restaurant on the northern tip of Refshaleon, very close to where they originally met. Did you buy that?
It was good. Hey, guys, I dropped her off.
There's people in Denmark laughing so hard at
this. I know.
Do people in Denmark listen
to this?
I dropped her off at a restaurant. No big deal. The restaurant owner, Bo Peterson, said that the area is very covered by CCTV, and he handed the video footage to the police.
Mm-hmm.
Soon after that, Peter Madsen changed his story. Then he said that there was an accident on the submarine while they were on it, and he had to bury her body at sea.
That alone, like, if that were true, is insane.
If that were true, the first story wouldn't have happened.
Right.
Because you would immediately pull out and be like, I'm so traumatized. This horrible thing happened.
Yeah.
10 days later, a headless torso that had been weighted down with metal is found in the waters off of Denmark and is identified as Kim Wall.
Oh, no.
They believe that Mr. Madsen deliberately sank his 40-ton submarine hours after the search for her began.
Oh, my God.
So here's the bad part. The torso, the arms, legs, and head were removed from the body. As a result of deliberate cutting.
Mm-hmm.
And which means that he did that to her in his submarine.
Duh.
Which probably means he planned to do it. Because what would you have that would cut a person on a submarine? Why would you have that handy? I mean, I don't know. Submarines, maybe there's an answer. But like, did you bring a hacksaw onto your submarine?
Yeah.
The lead investigator also revealed that the blood found on the sunken submarine was confirmed as Kim Wall's. Sure. Mr. Madsen's lawyer said he does not confess to anything and pleads not guilty.
It wasn't a negative thing.
Yeah. The DNA match doesn't change my client's explanation that an accident happened.
Yeah.
What happened? Right? This guy is... the skipper and designer of the UC-3 Nautilus, a privately owned submarine, and reports describe him as a hobby engineer. It's not clear what his background or training is. While building his own crowdfunded submarine, which is insane.
It's like, you guys, there's charities that you can give money to.
Give me money to make my own adult boy submarine. He gets it built, then he has volunteers and people working on it with him. But then in 2008, he moves on to what they call a more lofty ambition, space exploration. Mm-hmm. So he's like Denmark's Elon Musk, essentially. Mm-hmm. So he's now running the Rocket Madsen Space Laboratory, which is also funded.
Could we call it a laboratory, please?
What?
Could we call it a laboratory?
A laboratory. Filled with aluminium. And that's also funded by donations. The aim is to launch a rocket from a floating platform in the Baltic and send a person into outer space.
Again, so many hungry children. I mean, do we need to keep giving money to fucking...
It really doesn't seem like it.
Mm-mm.
So it turned out that he was... They were talking about that he had a dispute with the group of volunteers that were maintaining the sub, and he left them this message on a website. You may think that a curse is lying on the Nautilus. That curse is me. There will not be peace on Nautilus for as long as I exist.
Wow. What a creep.
And seemingly he's talking about like these volunteers and some kind of fight that they all got in together or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is so crazy.
Isn't that awful?
Yeah.
And creepy and...
The weird thing is, like, if that were... Why take off her head and limbs? Like, clearly you're hiding something.
Yes.
Shit. Oh, I didn't think of a positive thing this week.
Oh, yeah, you have to think of one.
Okay. You know what? I'm really excited for our tour.
Mm-hmm.
No, not count. Fair. Fuck. Okay.
That's not a thing that happened to you.
You're right.
That's the future. Well, I was going to say I went bowling at this tiny bowling alley in Montrose. And did I show you that picture?
Mm-mm.
It's the cutest. It's like almost a third of the size of a normal bowling alley. Aww. And it's totally from like the early 60s, maybe late 50s.
Oh my God. And it's not all modernized.
No, not at all. And it's like, it was Dave Anthony's birthday.
Yeah.
And, it was super fun, but you can rent it out for private parties.
Oh my God. And where's Montrose?
It's the one that's kind of up. It's once again up in the hills. It's kind of by Altadena.
Okay.
Like if you just drive right above Glendale.
Sure, sure, sure. Oh, okay.
And it was just perfect. It was like my favorite party because there was chatting and lots of people that I love.
And there wasn't like crazy loud music, so you can't talk to anyone like at a bar.
No. And also people would bowl, but then they would stop bowling because, you know, you only want to do that for a certain amount of time.
I love bowling alley parties.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
I think I might have a party there.
I'm going. Can I come? You're like, actually, no, you're not. I just invited myself to
Steven told me not to invite you.
I just invited myself to your party.
You're automatically invited to the party.
Yay.
Yeah.
I'm automatically coming, so it's a positive.
Okay, good.
My dad came over today and helped me with my finances.
Oh, how was that?
It was good. He didn't yell. There was a moment where I could hear the tension in his voice. I also don't think he knew what he was doing.
Right.
I think in the long run, all it was someone was sitting there with me saying, you have to do this now. And there were 14 times where if I had been on my own,
you would have just walked away.
There were 14 times like, I'm just going to do this later. I'm just not going to do this. And yeah. He was like, well, let's just do this and then we can do that. And I like ended up doing it.
That's great.
And it worked.
That's great.
Yeah. And it just made me happy that
it was a huge weight lifted off your shoulders.
Huge weight, but also like kind of gave me that like, oh, dad, like, yeah, that's what dads are for.
That's right.
He didn't know what he was doing. He was like, I was going to be a CPA and a something and a money lawyer with our tax lawyer. And I dropped out and I'm like, what the fuck are you doing here? I thought you knew what you were doing. He's like, I'm not really good with numbers. And I'm like, I thought you were.
Did he really say that?
Yes.
That's so funny.
But he ended up just sitting there while I did a bunch of things. And like, I had someone to, I was like, well, this number is this. And he was like, he just sat there and it was great.
That's so good.
So it was really nice. And yeah.
My dad was very patient when I went through my extreme financial crisis because I never said a word to him about it. Mm-hmm. Because he is so paranoid about money and he's so, he's been on it. Like he used to lecture me about you have to make sure you get your taxes done from when I was like in junior high. It was just a reminder. It would, yeah, be like, and never, you don't want the government after you. He'd always say shit like that.
That's such a dad. My dad did that too. My, yeah, dad got me my first bank account.
It's what they do.
Yeah.
It's what they're into.
He's like, braces and a bank account. That's what I can provide you. Not a ton of affection. I'm not good life advice because my life isn't shambles.
Well, that's good. I get a lot of relief from that.
You do too, because it's also your finances.
100%.
Because it's My Favorite Murder finances that I screwed up royally.
Oh,
you have a bonus in that we're not going to get arrested.
Yes, that's very true. But also here's your bonus in me. I could never judge you. If you were like, hey, sorry, I lost everything.
I know.
I'd be like, oh, well,
because I actually
there's
said
nothing
that
I can say.
I said that today where he was like, you got it. You should make sure, because if some of it was My Favorite Murder stuff, he was like, you should make sure Karen can see all this. So she knows like you're playing her well. And I'm like, oh no, she knows. She knows. And she knows how fucked I've made it. And she's cool with it.
Yep.
So yeah.
Because
like,
those
huge
things,
weight off my shoulders that you are okay with it.
Of course. Here's the thing. At the end of the day, and I'm not, this sounds phony, it's only money. Mm-hmm. Now, when I don't have money, I don't really feel that way.
No.
No one does.
No one does.
But truly, people do such terrible fucking things to themselves and to each other because of money.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it happen. It's very bad. Mm-hmm. And when people are focused on that, because at the end of the day, think of it, you get a check. Obviously, a lot of us are in, you get into a bad place where you're like, yes, $5,000 would solve this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. That's true. But if you were above level and then you had a $5,000 check, this is what happened to me when I worked, when I had my first big job.
Yeah.
All I did was work. And so I had absolutely no life and I just collected money, mm-hmm, and bought cashmere sweaters from J. Crew. That's all I did.
Because you thought you had to spend it because you were working so hard.
It was the only thing I could figure out to do, yeah, to like, oh, maybe this will make me happy. Yeah. So I had cashmere sweaters in every color and I was more miserable than I've ever been in my life. And that's when I learned that lesson of like, I wasn't doing stand up. I wasn't performing. I was just a behind the scenes, behind the camera person that was giving all of my creativity to someone else. And it was fucking killing me. So it didn't matter how many fucking cashmere sweaters I had.
You showed up in at work because you showed up at a miserable job.
Yeah.
You know, my thing too is that like, I've been poor before. I've like pretty much up until I was 32, been paycheck to paycheck from childhood on.
Yeah.
And it's not the fucking, you still can have happiness and survive.
100%.
Like you're not happy because you don't have money. It sucks. And there is a part of you that's unhappy because of it, but you still get to have positive life experiences. So yeah. Not having money is not going to take that away from us.
That's right. Well, and also sometimes when you have to get a little creative, you can have better and more rich life, yeah, experiences because you're actually kind of in the mix. Whereas I think sometimes when you have money and security, you become very isolated,
yeah,
and you also start living lives that other people can't relate to.
Yeah.
So you're just kind of like, you know,
we're fucking tenacious. Or what was the other one?
Resilient.
Resilient.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I'll always support all the murderinos who make shit on Etsy and sell it, like My Favorite Murder
Hell
stuff.
Yeah.
Cause like, hell yeah. I wish I had had that when I was fucking broke.
Yes.
Make that fucking money, you guys. Create your awesome art projects and if the you're cool good shit. At
calligraphy.
Yeah.
Write up amazing. Some shit.
Amazing. Just don't, there's one person who's selling our logo on something.
Oh no. You have to make it.
You have to make it.
You have to make it. You have to earn it. And don't be afraid to give us credit since it is our show. Yeah.
Just plug our show. Is I all mean, we ask.
Yeah. We are. You,
which
you
have, they do.
Don't pretend you fucking made it up.
Give us credit. Take your money.
Take your dirty blood money.
Literally.
You guys, thanks for listening.
We love you.
Stay sexy.
Don't get murdered.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah. Elvis, want a cookie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mimi, want a cookie? Mimi? Elvis. Okay.
That was Elvis doing a Mimi.
Yeah, he's like, yes.